Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. This week, the big news was Tucker Carlson airing the surveillance footage of the January 6th protests at the Capitol, a video that was not played during the Democrat-led congressional hearings on the January 6th event. Now that the Republicans are the majority in Congress, the new Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, was able to release to Fox News and to Tucker Carlson all of the January 6th video. And so last week, Tucker Carlson showed portions of this surveillance video, particularly people who attended the rally, walking peacefully through the Capitol building, security guards waving them on, even opening doors for them. The QAnon shaman, as he's called, Jacob Chansley, is seen walking through the Capitol building by himself without guards trying to stop him. But he was given 4 years in jail for his actions. Tucker Carlson interviewed his lawyer, and the lawyer said the government would not allow access to that video for Chansley's defense. And Chansley at that time thought being in the Capitol building was legal. I mean, after all, it is the people's house, and the guards weren't stopping him or telling him he shouldn't be there. And there were plenty of people in the Capitol that day who thought the officials opened the Capitol for the people. I mean, if you can stand and protest in the streets, why can't you protest in the rotunda of the Capitol? Of course, there were political hotheads and Antifa-like people who broke windows, and they should be prosecuted. But the vast majority of people were not breaking into the Capitol. Yet the narrative put forth by the Democrats was that the January 6th protest was an insurrection, as if these people were actually trying to overturn the U.S. government. As one meme describes it, Steven Crowder is sitting at a Change My Mind table with the sign, "An insurrection doesn't have tour guides." But the story, or rather the narratives the Democrats wanted to make of the event, was that this protest was complete evil. And at this point, I want to show you the video montage I made of the rally. That program that contained that video, program number 149, was taken down by YouTube. And I want to resurrect that video for posterity. Here it is.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. To be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. To the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shore, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt
So I put that together to give people a sense of what the rally was like. Now, in that program, I went on to describe the people there, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I want to replay some of those comments that I made 2 years ago, because I still believe that those comments are a fair and balanced perspective of the rally and a warning against self-righteous judgmentalism, the kind of judgmentalism we have seen over the past 2.5 years with the media and politicians. So here's that video. Here are my observations. One of the first things you will notice in a Trump rally or any rally, it is one big nutty mess, which may be discouraging to some people, but it really shouldn't be. There were these nice all-American Christian families with their, you know, children holding up patriotic Bible signs, homeschool families taking their children to this rally as a civic lesson. But then there were the loudmouths, people with kooky conspiracy theories. The Lyndon LaRouche people were there trying to convince me that every bad thing that happens is a plot by the British monarchy. Then there was a guy I talked to who tried to convince me that the Federal Reserve and the bankers started World War I and World War II in order to make money. I've read all the books. I know all the arguments. But it's really confusion over cause and effect. Well, then at the rally, there were a number of open-air evangelists with their PA systems shouting hellfire and brimstone. Bottom line, it appeared that they lacked wisdom in knowing how to properly present the gospel in this kind of political venue. I mean, when Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump are speaking, please turn off your PA mics, stop your preaching. And second, if you're going to preach, speak to the people in a gentle and informative way about the kingdom of Christ, his ways, his truth. So at these rallies, there is a lot of well-informed people there, but there are also misguided, uninformed people, even some political hotheads. That's to be expected. You know, people from the backcountry coming to show Washington a thing or two. Gun-toting, Bible-thumping, normal people. But never diminish these people. As Abraham Lincoln once said, God must love the common people because he made so many of them. Even in all of their nuttiness, these people often have more common sense than those elites down the street sitting in Congress. And compared to a leftist rally, these Trump supporters were saints. Whenever you attend such rallies, never go away thinking, I am better than these people. Like Luke chapter 18, the Pharisee who prayed, oh God, I thank you that I'm not like other people. No, you're the same as everyone else. You might have a different perspective. You might have more information, but these people have something important to say. Now, don't get me wrong. I know error when I see it, but there is a difference between evil and a misguided exuberance for truth. Consider 1 Corinthians chapter 1, where the Apostle Paul puts all the elites in their place with the following statement. For consider your calling, brethren, that there are not many wise according to flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. But God has chosen the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. and the base things of the world and the despised God has chosen, and the things that are not, so that he might nullify the things that are. And that puts us all in our place. Also, 1 Corinthians 1:25, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. God will often use the uneducated farmer to teach the educated banker, and God will sometimes use the educated banker to humble and teach the farmer something. If you think that you are better than the variety of Trump supporters, that is the sin of pride. The educated elites who think they are so smart are just as ignorant, just as foolish, but in their own way. I mean, I was listening to the Senate debate on Wednesday night. They speak as educated men, but their reasoning was unsound and illogical. They continually engaged in some of the classic logical fallacies, even though they are supposed to be so educated. So YouTube removed that video because it was considered misinformation. So I went back and looked at what the content moderators must have objected to. I ended the video by listing 5 signs of election irregularities that needed to be investigated. And this is how I phrased it. Quote, I want to again cover evidence of election fraud. This will include some new evidence of fraud that came out before Christmas in the Georgia Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. In the video, I never said there was election fraud. I said, here is evidence of election fraud, just like any prosecutor would bring evidence before a jury. Now, there are plenty of people on social media who were saying that the Democrats stole the election or that Trump won by a landslide. I never said such things. I simply shared the concerns people had and the evidence that was being circulated. Number one, the bellwether counties and states. It's a fact that no one has lost the presidency and yet won the key states and counties that Trump won. That's not proof of fraud beyond a shadow of a doubt, but evidence that should be investigated. Number two, the jump in Biden's votes and the decrease in Trump's votes on election night. Votes for a candidate never go down in an election to the degree we saw that night. Now, this could happen because there is a whole new system of mail-in ballots that need to be counted. But that's evidence that maybe something's amiss. Number three, I mentioned the Data Integrity Group's findings. That group had recently testified in the Georgia's Judiciary Committee hearings. And you can call them frauds if you want, but then that too needs to be investigated. Major news networks are always quoting groups and studies and statistics that certainly can be challenged, but it's not considered misinformation if they're reporting what other groups present. Number four, I mentioned a group of 400 former U.S. intelligence officers that were investigating the possibility of election fraud. Number five, I mentioned Jovan Pulitzer, his claim that he could hack into voting machines. I even mentioned that Pulitzer had a questionable background. Number six, I talked about some of the obvious cover-ups in the Georgia recount, which was covered by the Atlanta News. And number seven, I mentioned how a pro-Trump Facebook group named Stop the Steal was shut down by Facebook after the group quickly amassed over 360,000 followers in 1 week. So here's the issue. I was not taken down for saying there was election fraud. I was taken down for presenting evidence of election fraud, evidence that needs to be investigated. And that censorship is a very dangerous precedent on the part of social media companies. When people are not allowed to challenge or question the popular narrative, where data is cherry-picked to favor one side, in this case, that Biden won fair and square, and there was absolutely no cheating, or like the cherry-picking done by the January 6th committee. Of course, the reason for censorship is always for the sake of public safety and truth. Historically, those who have silenced their political opponents always do it with the pretext of public safety, liberty, truth. With the Republicans now being in charge of the House, Congress is having hearings concerning the origin of COVID. And the testimony of the former head of the CDC was that COVID could not come from nature. It definitely came from a lab. And the former head of the FBI, Christopher Wray, also testified that it was likely a lab leak. The Congress and the Senate both voted unanimously to declassify all the internal documents, government documents, as to the origins of the virus. But just last year, if I gave evidence of the lab leak theory, I would have been thrown off of social media for spreading misinformation. Why did certain people refuse to consider the lab leak theory? Because of science? No. There was a political, ideological agenda where they didn't want to create tensions with China, where they thought that this would be racism against Asians, or that this could start World War III. So notice what happens when the goal is not truth, but the goal is some ideological agenda. And this always results in the suppression of truth. Romans chapter 1, and this is a major biblical theme. Isaiah chapter 59, justice has turned back and righteousness stands far away. For truth has stumbled in the streets and uprightness cannot enter. Yes, truth is lacking, and he who turns aside from evil makes himself a prey. So like the origins of COVID, in the future, what else are we going to discover that is true, which our social leaders claim to be misinformation? This is why censorship is always bad policy, and it always favors tyranny. Well, back to the January 6th hearings. There was so much that that committee refused to hear. After Carlson showed the surveillance video from January 6th, committee members said they had never seen that video. They never allowed for the testimony of any of the January 6th prisoners. And here's another issue that was never discussed, an issue that most people never heard about, and it has to do with the legality of the certification. Here's a story from Substack, quote, "The reason those thousands of largely peaceful American citizens showed up at the U.S. Capitol that day is precisely because the electoral votes were due to be counted, as required by the U.S. Constitution, and they had real concern about the validity of the elections in certain states, including Pennsylvania, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Georgia, where Biden won by a whisker, and where election counting shut down in each locale in the middle of the night, which is definitely irregular. And they did not want the electoral slates in certain states to be certified until a more thorough review and recount, a forensic audit, would be conducted. The Electoral Count Act of 1887 makes provision for non-certification should there be objections in the face of election irregularities. To wit, upon such reading of any such certificate or paper, the President of the Senate shall call for objections. If any, every objection shall be made in writing and shall state clearly and concisely and without argument the grounds thereof, and shall be signed by at least one senator and one member of the House of Representatives before the same shall be received. And there was an objection signed by Congressman Paul Gossert, Republican of Texas, and Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, as required. In past years, when Democrat representatives objected, notably in 2001 and 2017, they did not have the requisite senatorial signatures, and so Vice President Gore and Biden, respectively, had to move on. But in this case, they had the signatures. And the objections were due to be heard. Then on cue, the so-called insurrection began. And shortly thereafter, at about 2 p.m., when Senator James Lankford, Republican Oklahoma, was speaking to the objections, the procedure was shut down. To suggest that it was President Trump's idea and handiwork makes no sense whatsoever, shutting it down was the last thing he wanted. So the Senate's failure to follow the law that day in regard to election irregularities is the case that was just presented to the Supreme Court last year. You might have heard about it, Brunson versus Adams, and the Supreme Court wouldn't touch it. That doesn't mean the case is invalid. The Supreme Court turns down all sorts of cases for political ideological reasons. So maybe the whole narrative of the media is wrong. It wasn't an insurrection. It was a legal protest for the rule of law. But with the thugs breaking into the Capitol, Biden supporters could characterize the whole event as an insurrection. The J6 committee didn't even consider that the Senate might have violated the law by ignoring the written request to investigate the election by members of the Senate and the House. But we'll never know. The Democrats had a story that they could keep in the news to smear their political opponents, and that's the strategy. Too often in politics, it isn't about what is right or what is truth, but truth is based on what will help the image or the advancement of the party. And so in 2022, they held in Congress for 6 months, January 6 hearings to continually discuss the event. And in December, they televised for 6 days on primetime the final report. It was like a prosecuting attorney giving his final appeal to the jury being the American people. Here's an article from Politico, which is not exactly a right-wing source. Democrats turned the January 6 hearings into must-see TV. The Democrats plan a full media blowout over January 6. The January 6 committee readies a full-fledged media event to tell their Trump coup story. So the best description of these hearings is that this was a show trial where only the prosecutor was able to present his case, but the defense attorney was prohibited from showing up at court. There were no politicians or participants from the rally representing the side of the J6 protesters. It was a one-sided show trial. I mean, even if you favor one political party, you have to see the injustice in all this. And there was plenty that needed to be brought out about how the Capitol Police abused innocent people, how they incited the crowd, how they opened the doors, how it was just a few individuals that caused the violence. And these people were not there to overturn the U.S. government in an insurrection as if they were like the Bolsheviks in 1917. So Tucker Carlson showed some of the footage and gave some perspective. Perspective that was not given in the January 6 hearings. And the political left and the media cried lies and misinformation. The day after Tucker Carlson showed his first video, New York Senator Chuck Schumer stood up in the Senate and he said, quote, you know, I could read this, but let's let Senator Schumer speak for himself.
Last night, millions of Americans tuned in to one of the most shameful hours we have ever seen on cable television. With contempt for the facts, disregard of the risks, and knowing full well he was lying to his audience, Fox News host Tucker Carlson ran a lengthy segment last night arguing the January 6th Capitol attack was not a violent insurrection. By diving deep into the waters of conspiracy and cherry-picking from thousands of hours of security footage, Mr. Carlson told the bold-faced lie that the Capitol attack, which we all saw with our own eyes, was somehow not an attack at all. He tried to argue it was nothing more than a peaceful sightseeing tour. Can you imagine? A nonviolent demonstration, a perfectly fine and appropriate instance of people expressing their opinion. I, so many others who were here in the Capitol, and millions of Americans are just furious with Tucker Carlson and Kevin McCarthy today.
So Chuck Schumer is complaining that Tucker Carlson is cherry-picking video from January 6th when that's exactly what the January 6th committee have been doing for the last 6 months. The Matthew chapter 7 principle of picking the beam out of your own eye before you pick out the speck of your brother's eye is so obvious here, it's hilarious. For Tucker Carlson to manipulate his viewers, that was evil. But for the Democrats and the J6 committee to manipulate viewers, that's okay. The best response to Schumer's outrage was from Andrew Klavan, who said, Democrats objected to Tucker Carlson showing the video because his distortion of the events interrupted their distortion of the events. So Schumer was like the prosecuting attorney who, when the defense attorney gets up to speak, cries out, objection, objection, Your Honor. And the judge asks why. And the prosecutor asks or says, because I believe that the perspective of the defense attorney is wrong. So don't be deceived by all the fake outrage. That's exactly what a prosecuting attorney does in court. Faking offense. To make it look as if any sane individual would convict the man accused, that there must be something wrong with you if you think that the defendant might be innocent. The next day, the New York Times headlines read, Republican lawmakers split over Carlson's false January 6 claims. Did you get that? Let me read it again. Republican lawmakers split over Carlson's false January 6 claims. How does the New York Times know that Carlson's claims are false? Because they're starting with the a priori assumption that their interpretation of the events is the only true interpretation. Here's a CNN report on Tucker Carlson. CNN shows how Tucker Carlson attempted to sanitize new January 6 footage. Well, it all depends on which footage you want to show, which footage you want to focus on or choose to watch. Tucker Carlson actually showed video of Capitol Police peacefully escorting Jacob Chansley around the Capitol and people peacefully walking through the Capitol taking pictures, like tourists. So are you going to believe your lying eyes? Or are you going to believe the Democrats, the J6 armed insurrection narrative? It all depends on who's telling the story, which clips are being shown. And the left is certainly upset because their narrative is being overturned. They've worked so hard to establish this narrative, and now it's being challenged. Their worldview is being challenged. And if you want to get people upset, if you want to get people enraged, challenge their truth claims, the way they see the world. Why do you think they put Jesus on the cross? Because he challenged their ideological, moral, religious perspectives. Now, here's a point that must be made. I don't doubt the sincerity of the Democrats or the J6 committee. They actually see January 6th as an insurrection. The worst thing that happened in America since the Civil War or since the burning of the Capitol in 1812. It's a big mistake on the part of some conservatives to say that these Democrats actually know they're fabricating an untrue story about January 6th. Sin is actually more subtle than that. People are blind leaders of the blind. Now, in the case of the Russian collusion hoax, there's plenty of evidence now that the media knew that the whole thing was a fabrication, but they deliberately pushed the story anyway to discredit President Trump. But even then, the lie doesn't seem like a lie when it favors your objectives. We begin to believe our own lie, especially when we say it again and again. People sincerely hold to their worldview. And so they assume how they see things must be the truth. They have no idea how their previous ideological choices cloud their judgment. What causes people to be so offended by the January 6th protests, but then turn around and call the Antifa and the BLM riots that took place all summer, that destroyed millions of dollars worth of property, to call them peaceful protests, to call them legitimate expressions of political speech, or they're justified because of a need for social justice? Remember what Nancy Pelosi said about the storming of the state house in Wisconsin by leftist protesters? She tweeted, "That was an impressive show of democracy in action." Why didn't she say that about the January 6th protest? Chuck Schumer said about the New York City riots that destroyed property, "I'm proud of the protests." Quote, in response to the violence, Schumer said, "But I'll tell you this, the overwhelming majority of protesters in New York, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, were peaceful protesters." Well, that's strange. Why didn't he say that about January 6th? Why did he support the January 6th hearings rather than simply saying, "Well, there was just a few bad actors. Most of the protest was peaceful. Let's just move on"? No, his mindset caused him to exaggerate the January 6th event. So the point I want us to learn is this. People cherry-pick the data according to their own ideological biases, an ideological agenda, just like Hitler overplayed the burning of the Reichstag in order to create a certain narrative, to implement martial law, to gain power for himself. Politicians never let a good crisis go to waste. They use it to push their power and their ideology. And in a world without God, it's not about discovering real truth. It's about what can be done to advance a political agenda. Whereas the righteous, as it says in Psalm 15, the righteous man takes an oath to his own hurt and doesn't change. In other words, he tells the truth, even if it's going to hurt him politically, emotionally, socially, financially. But for the unrighteous, truth is compromised. The data is cherry-picked toward that which will help them politically, financially, socially. What happened last week in Tucker Carlson giving a different perspective on the protest was just another teachable moment, an example of how people see what they want to see, how people are biased in their interpretation of events, how people see the world through whatever glasses they put on. Is there scripture about this? Absolutely. It is called in scripture partiality. Judging the rightness or the wrongness of a situation based upon something other than truth, something other than the facts seen through the moral law of God. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 17. "You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not fear man, for the judgment is God's." Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 19. "You shall not distort justice. You shall not be partial. You shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous." Proverbs 18:5, "To show partiality to the wicked is not good, nor to thrust aside the righteous in judgment." Proverbs 24:23, "These also are the sayings of the wise. To show partiality in judgment is not good." Proverbs 28:21. "To show partiality is not good, because for a piece of bread, a man will transgress." The point is this: do not give unfair preferences or biases based upon a person or a party or what gives you gain, because even for a piece of bread, for just some little gain, look at how people will transgress. Look at how they'll be biased in their judgment. And if something gives one political party or one's ideological worldview, the slightest gain, people will be biased with the data. They will make the data favor them and make the data indict their opponents. And again, this is what happens when truth is decided not based upon the word of God, but on what helps people achieve their goals. People say about abortion and LGBTQ and communism and socialism that it must be true and it must be right because it affirms what I want to do and what I want to be. People don't put themselves under an objective moral standard of truth like they should because they see themselves as God. Or at the very least, God has nothing to say about these things or that God must agree with me. And this is the problem we now have in a nation that's abandoned God. We're a nation ruled by men, not by God. And so there's no standards. And this is why there's so much bias and cherry picking in politics today. Now, if you look at, you know, historical cases in the 19th century, I mean, there were plenty of biased partisan political speeches in Congress back then, but it's worse today. And not only has it gotten worse, people's blindness to it has gotten worse. Now, in the New Testament, there are a number of texts about people cherry-picking data to suit their own agenda. Mark chapter 12, verse 14, they came to Jesus and they said, "Teacher, we know that you are truthful and defer to no one, for you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful to pay a poll tax to Caesar or not?" So the people knew Jesus' character, and they knew how things should be. Matthew chapter 11. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say he has a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, "Behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds." The Pharisees, in their refusal to accept God's truth, and in refusing to even consider the possibility that they were wrong, they became experts at cherry-picking the data in order to indict their opponents. Matthew 23, 24, "You blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel." So they majored on the minors and minored on the majors if it suited them. Do you ever find yourself doing that? Making a mountain out of a molehill because you have someone you want to put down, or because you want to exalt yourself, or you want to score some points for your argument. Do we practice what Jesus told us not to do in Matthew chapter 7? Looking at the speck that's in our brother's eye and not seeing the beam in our own eye. That's cherry picking the data to help build up your cause. Help build up your own ego. I mean, even in listening to this program today, we might be thinking to ourselves of all the people this applies to and never apply it to ourselves. This reminds me of the old Rorschach ink blot test joke that an obese man goes into a psychiatrist's office and the psychiatrist shows him ink blots. And he asks the patient, "What does he see?" And the patient says, "Well, I see a cheeseburger and a large shake." And so the doctor shows him another ink blot, and the man says, "Well, I see a dozen donuts." And then he shows him another ink blot, and he says, "Well, I see a tray of tacos." And the psychiatrist says to the man, "I believe you have an obsession with food." And the man says, "Me? You're the one showing me all the pictures of food." Well, I think that's a funny joke. But the moral of the story is this. We superimpose our own bias on others as if they're the problem. So here's some more scripture. Matthew 23, 29. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, 'If we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the shedding of the blood of the prophets.'" So this is a selective or biased view of history, to see it as favoring oneself or one's own party. That I'm certainly not the Nazis or the progressive eugenicists of the 1930s. That's a reference to my opponents. I'm the good guy of the story. I'm the one who's the hero fighting the evil. for the Pharisees, they believed that they were in the company of Isaiah and Jeremiah and Daniel and Ezekiel, that they were the good guys, and that Jesus was like the false prophet of the Old Testament. You know, it's just amazing how we can put on rose-colored glasses and see the world the way we want to see it, rather than seeing the truth. And when the Bible addresses spiritual blindness, this is what it's talking about. 2 Corinthians 4, that the God of this world has blinded the minds of unbelieving. And this is what it looks like. And this is how it acts. It cherry picks the data. James chapter 2, verse 1, my brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. And 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 21, I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and of Jesus Christ and of his chosen angels to maintain these principles without bias, doing nothing in the spirit of partiality. Then, of course, there is the trial of Jesus, the greatest example of bias and cherry-picking the data. The Sanhedrin said, this man is performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, all men will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. Says who? That was their own perspective of how things would work out. The high priest Caiaphas saw Jesus' ministry as such a threat to the nation that he said that Jesus needed to be put to death so that the whole nation would not perish. What an exaggeration to the supposed threat that Jesus posed. The prophet Jeremiah's, his trial was the same thing. Jeremiah chapter 38, verse 4, then the official said to the king, now let this man Jeremiah be put to death, inasmuch as he is discouraging the men of war who are left in the city and all of the people by speaking such words to them, for this man is not seeking the well-being of the people, but rather their harm. Says who? That was their perspective. But the reality from God's perspective was that Jeremiah was actually seeking to save the nation. The king and his administration were actually the ones destroying the nation. They were accusing Jeremiah of the very thing that they were doing. That's a deception of sin. The same thing happened in the trial of the Apostle Paul. Acts chapter 24, verse 5. For we have found this man a real pest, a fellow who stirs up dissension among all the Jews throughout the world and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. And he's even trying to desecrate the temple, and then we arrested him. Was their perspective right? That Paul was troubling the world? That he really wanted to destroy the temple and the nation of Israel? Well, from God's perspective, and from the perspective of biblical truth, Paul was actually helping the world. So, in closing, what does this all mean? For secular humanists who do recognize that people see things through their bias, they conclude, therefore, that no one is right, that there's no such thing as truth, since everyone disagrees, that truth is simply a human construct, so everyone can have his or her own truth, and might makes for right. But Christians believe that God and his word are the ultimate standard for truth. And the Bible is not ambiguous or subject to various interpretations. There is one truth if words mean what words mean and sentences mean what sentences mean. There is a right and wrong, and there is a truth to which we must conform. The answer is to conform our minds to the Word of God so that we see truth clearly, so that we refuse to cherry-pick the data like the Pharisees, like the false teachers, like modern-day politicians and ideologues. President Ronald Reagan, in a speech back in 1983, pointed out a common error in regard to deciding what is truth. Quote, I urge you to beware the temptation of pride, the temptation of blithely declaring yourselves above it all and labeling both sides equally at fault. Unquote. The point is this. It wasn't as if both the Sadducees and the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees and Jesus were all wrong, or that they were all a little right and a little wrong. No, Jesus was right and the Sanhedrin were wrong. We're either right or wrong in our perspectives. We're either in the light or we're in the darkness. We're going to have to return to the subject because there's a whole lot more to say. Thanks for listening. May your love grow in all real knowledge and discernment. Philippians 1:9. Don't forget to subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below. And may Jesus Christ reign.